Hello, and welcome to our online press conference. My name is Tom Pelton, and I'm Director of Communications at the Environmental Integrity Project. We are America's environmental watchdog, a nonprofit organization that works to hold polluters and governments accountable to protect public health and the environment. Today, we are releasing our new report, State of Decline: Cuts to State Environmental Agencies Compound Damage from the Dismantling of EPA. You can find it on our website at environmentalintegrity.org. We will have six speakers, then open it up to questions from reporters. Journalists, we'd love to get your questions. And so, as we go along, if you have a question, click on the Q&A button at the bottom of your screen, then type in a note saying you have a question. Then at the end of the call, I'll unmute you, call on you, and then please also remember to unmute yourself. Our speakers today are first, Jen Duggan, Executive Director of the Environmental Integrity Project. Then we'll have Drew Ball from North Carolina, Southeast Campaigns Director for NRDC. Then from Texas, Catherine Guerra, TCEQ Campaign Director for Public Citizen. Then from Louisiana, Ann Rolfes, Director of the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. Then from Illinois, Jen Walling, Chief Executive Officer of the Illinois Environmental Council. And then finally, as our closer, Alex Baumstein, Executive Director of the Clean Air Council in Pennsylvania. So first we'll have Jen Duggan, Executive Director of the Environmental Integrity Project. Go ahead, Jen.
Thank you, Tom. The Environmental Protection Agency, together with state environmental agencies, plays a vital role in protecting the health and well-being of every community in our nation. These agencies ensure that our drinking water is clean and safe, that the air we breathe is free from harmful pollution, and that our rivers, lakes, and coastal waters remain healthy for fishing, swimming, and other public uses. Their efforts safeguard lives and enhance the overall quality of life for people across the United States. Next month, Congress is scheduled to vote on funding for the EPA for fiscal year 2026. The Trump administration has proposed draconian budget cuts, in part arguing that weakening or even dismantling the EPA wouldn't be a problem because states should assume greater responsibility for controlling pollution. It's not yet clear what the size of the cuts to EPA's budget will be. House Republicans have proposed a 23% cut. The Trump administration has asked for a 55% cut, which would strip the agency down to funding levels not seen in four decades. Republicans in the Senate Appropriations Committee have endorsed a 5% cut. But no matter what the outcome is for this coming year, it's important to remember that EPA has already had its budget slashed by 40% and its workforce reduced by 18% over the last 15 years. And just since President Trump started his second term, about a third of EPA workers, more than 3,000 individuals, have been terminated, have retired, or otherwise been driven out of the agency. All of this is occurring in a world facing growing environmental threats, including the impacts of catastrophic climate change, rapidly expanding oil, gas, and petrochemical plants that pump toxic pollution into the air we breathe and don't always follow the rules. Forever chemicals and microplastics in the water we drink, and industrial scale farming operations that contaminate our rivers and streams. In this context, we thought we'd ask the question, if EPA's capacity to do its job is further diminished, how prepared are our states to shoulder more responsibility for protecting us from these threats? Unfortunately, not well, as it turns out. Our team of researchers examined state budget documents and other public records in all 50 states. We found that far from being ready to step up and assume more responsibilities in response to cuts at EPA, over half of state environmental agencies, 27 out of 50, have had their own budgets cut by state lawmakers over the last 15 years, some even more dramatically than EPA. For example, from 2010 to 2024, lawmakers in four states slash the funding for their state pollution control agencies by more than 40%. Mississippi was the worst, cutting its environmental agency by a shocking 71% over that 15-year span. South Dakota cut its budget by 61% and Connecticut by 51%. Notably, several of the nation's largest oil, gas, and petrochemical states, regions that have experienced significant growth in extraction and industrial activity since the fracking boom 2 decades ago, have not strengthened their environmental oversight as one might expect. Instead, they've moved in the opposite direction. Louisiana provides a clear example. Over the past 15 years, as liquefied natural gas and petrochemical facilities have rapidly expanded, state officials eliminated 222 positions from the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality. That's a 24% reduction, among the steepest cuts of any environmental agency in the country. In neighboring Texas, the number of facilities with air pollution control permits has grown significantly, including for the expanding plastics industry. But state lawmakers there cut the budget of the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality by 33% between 2010 and 2024. This issue, rapidly growing industries and reduced environmental oversight, it's not limited to fossil fuels and petrochemicals on the Gulf Coast. North Carolina, one of the fastest growing states in the nation and home to a large and expanding factory farming sector, implemented the steepest percentage reduction in environmental staffing in the US. Between 2010 and 2024, lawmakers cut 32% of positions at the state's environmental agency. Florida, another rapidly growing state facing extensive real estate development and increasing climate-related risks, imposed the largest reduction in total staff. From 2010 to 2024, 394 positions dedicated to pollution control were removed from its environmental agency. We found that reductions in environmental agency budgets have occurred in states controlled by Democrats and Republicans. For example, Connecticut, New York, and Illinois, as well as Mississippi and Alabama, have all reduced staffing and resources for their environmental agencies over the past 15 years. These cuts increase the risk that residents will face higher levels of pollution, especially if the EPA lacks the funding and capacity to do its job. Illinois trimmed its environmental agency budget by 21% over the last 15 years, even more than Indiana or West Virginia, which had 19% cuts. We also want to highlight that some states, approximately 20, are moving in the opposite direction. They're investing in stronger environmental programs and expanding their staffing and resources. This uneven trend underscores that any effort to further weaken the federal EPA would have disproportionate consequences across the country. In states where budgets and staffing for environmental agencies have already been significantly reduced, communities could face an increase in pollution risks. Meanwhile, residents of states that are bolstering environmental protections would be somewhat better protected by a more robust second line of defense for public health. California led a handful of states, including Colorado and Vermont, that have dramatically increased funding for their environmental agencies since 2010. In part as a response to climate change, California quadrupled its state spending on pollution control programs over the last 15 years, all while its greenhouse gas emissions fell and its economic productivity grew. Colorado and Vermont also stand out as leaders, more than doubling their investments and their state environmental agencies between 2010 and 2024. Their actions demonstrate that states can help shape their own environmental future and provide stronger protections for residents against industrial pollution. However, even the most proactive states cannot fully compensate for the loss of a strong federal EPA. The effectiveness of our nation's environmental laws relies on a well-resourced EPA working in partnership with capable state agencies. The EPA establishes national pollution standards, provides critical program oversight, conducts its own enforcement efforts, and leads essential scientific research. When states have the necessary authority, expertise, and commitment, the EPA can delegate many responsibilities to them, but this shared system only works when both levels of government are adequately supported. Another finding from our report involves three states: Pennsylvania, Idaho, and Tennessee. At first glance, each appears to have significantly increased funding for its environmental agency. Pennsylvania's Department of Environmental Protection, for example, shows an 87% increase from 2010 to 2024. However, a closer look reveals that these gains are largely the result of recent federal programs during the Biden administration, including funds from the Inflation Reduction Act. Because this level of federal investment and state environmental programs would not be continued under the Trump administration's proposals, the recent funding boost in states like Pennsylvania is not likely to be sustained. The findings of our report strongly reinforce the case against deep cuts to EPA's budget and workforce when Congress considers funding next month. Many states have already weakened critical programs responsible for protecting our nation's water, land, and air. And continuing to weaken the federal EPA at the same time would leave significant gaps in public health protections and heighten pollution risks for communities across the country. State lawmakers also have a critical role to play. They must provide the funding necessary to safeguard public health in their states and reverse the disturbing trend of cutting state pollution control programs. In many states, restoring this capacity is urgently needed to protect residents. Ultimately, the effectiveness of our environmental safeguards depends on both levels of government working together with enough resources to do their job in the face of increasingly complex environmental threats. If both lines of defense fail through harsh cuts to federal and state environmental agencies, public health, our natural ecosystems, and the global climate will suffer serious and lasting harm. Thanks so much for joining the call today, and I look forward to answering your questions after my colleagues speak. And I'll turn it back over to you, Tom.
Thanks. That was Jen Duggan, Executive Director of the Environmental Integrity Project. Next, from North Carolina, we have Drew Ball, Southeast Campaigns Director for NRDC. Go ahead, Drew.
Thank you, Tom. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Ball, and I lead the Southeast Campaigns team at the Natural Resources Defense Council. I'm based in Asheville, North Carolina, and I'm proud to join the Environmental Integrity Project today for the release of State of Decline. This report confirms what communities across the country, especially here in North Carolina, have felt for years. The systems meant to protect our air, our water, and our health are being hollowed out, quietly, steadily, and dangerously. And in the Southeast, these cuts hit especially hard. In my home state, the Department of Environmental Quality has lost nearly a third of its staff since 2010, the steepest decline of any state in the country. We're seeing the consequences. Reduced staffing has led to weaker enforcement. At one point, penalties for violations fell by 93%, while overall enforcement actions dropped by half, raising serious concerns about whether the state is effectively deterring violations. These cuts have real impacts on the people of our state. When a family in eastern North Carolina notices their tap water turning cloudy after a heavy rain, there are fewer staff who can investigate. When a neighborhood near Wilmington smells ammonia from a poultry operation, there are fewer inspectors available to respond. When hurricanes send floodwaters through low-lying areas, mixing industrial pollution, animal waste, and stormwater, the staff responsible for tracking and responding to those threats are being asked to do far more with far less. These cuts come at a time when large-scale industrial agriculture is expanding dramatically in our state. North Carolina is home to over 8 million hogs and nearly a billion chickens, many in flood-prone areas. Sampson and Duplin counties are the highest pork-producing counties in the country. Hogs outnumber people down east 30 to 1. That produces a tremendous amount of waste. and a tremendous amount of risk to ecosystems and public health. We've seen how dangerous that can be. After Hurricane Florence in 2018, at least 50 lagoons overflowed into neighboring communities. Many families today live with waste in roadside ditches, wells too contaminated to drink from, and constant fear about what the next storm will carry into their yards. Yet, the very agency responsible for protecting these families is facing a growing burden with shrinking staff, shrinking budgets, and shrinking political support. And now the federal government is proposing the deepest cuts to EPA in 40 years. That's a recipe for disaster in states like ours, where the state agency is already stretched thin. It's like dismantling the fire department while the house is already burning. We saw progress under Governor Cooper, halting some cuts, setting cost-saving carbon reduction goals, and advancing action on forever chemicals. But DEQ has still been forced to operate with one hand tied behind their back. That's because lawmakers in Raleigh have increasingly treated environmental and public health protections as political targets. They've taken extraordinary and at times unconstitutional steps to weaken environmental oversight by removing the governor's appointment power on environmental boards, requiring legislative approval for key decisions, weakening water pollution standards, and restricting people's ability to hold industrial farms accountable when health or property is harmed. The result is more authority shifting away from scientists and professional staff and into the hands of politicians beholden to powerful interests, leaving communities with fewer protections than past generations. Consider the people who are left most vulnerable in these communities. The farmer in Bladen County who can't get a straight answer about whether his well water is contaminated or not. The parent in Cumberland County who wants to know whether industrial chemicals in the Cape Fear River are showing up in her child's bloodstream. The residents in Wayne County wondering why no one from the state came to investigate a smell that made an entire neighborhood feel sick. These are not hypotheticals. These are stories that are becoming sadly routine. Protecting our environment is not a luxury. It's a basic function of government, just like maintaining roads, funding schools, or operating fire departments. And when those protections crumble, the burden falls on people, on families, on workers, and on children. And I want to emphasize something else. North Carolina is a rapidly growing state. We are consistently ranked as one of the best states for business. Yet, DEQ cannot keep up with the surge in permit applications and the increased pressure on our natural resources. That's not just bad for the environment, it's bad for businesses that need clear, timely, predictable permitting. Deep cuts to DEQ don't just harm the public, they undermine the confidence of companies that want to operate here responsibly. So, here's the bottom line. North Carolina cannot keep its people safe if the agencies meant to protect them are left to wither. And the federal government cannot expect states to do more while it simultaneously knocks their legs out from under them. Today's report is a warning, and it's also a guide. It shows us where the gaps are and what needs to be rebuilt, and which communities have been paying the price for far too long. Clean water and clean air are not partisan issues, they are core responsibilities of government. The people of North Carolina and every state deserve a strong, well-supported environmental agency that can protect their health and their future. We appreciate you all being here today. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. That was Drew Ball, Southeast Campaigns Director for NRDC. I know that there are a lot of North Carolina reporters on the line. We'd love to get your questions and questions from all journalists. So click on the Q&A button at the bottom of your screen if you have a question you want to ask Drew or anyone else. And at the end of the presentations, we'll call on you for your questions. Next from Texas, Catherine Guerra, TCEQ Campaign Director for Public Citizen. Go ahead, Catherine.
Thanks, Tom. I'm Catherine Guerra with Public Citizen's Texas office. Public Citizen is a nonprofit consumer advocacy organization that champions the public's interest in the halls of power. My role there is the director of the TCEQ Watchdog Campaign. The primary goals of our campaign are holding the TCEQ accountable, building the capacity of communities, and cultivating local power. Our campaign is closely monitoring the TCEQ and its activities, including permitting, enforcement, hearings, rulemakings, and executive actions. We help communities stay informed about the impacts of those agency decisions, and we provide technical assistance, connecting them to resources to help stakeholders effectively engage with the agency. But the TCEQ has built a really unfortunate reputation for lax environmental penalties and fines so small they amount to a rounding error on a multinational corporation's balance sheet. Public Citizens TCEQ Watchdog Campaign advocates for agency reforms that put people first and corporate profits second. I have 18 years of experience in the environmental space, including just under 4 years at the TCEQ, working in the Compliance Assistance Division. In that role, I did comprehensive air, water, and waste regulatory compliance assistance for small businesses and local governments. I helped regulated entities obtain proper permits and complete reporting requirements and really learn how to comply with the environmental regulations applicable to their operations. I worked in both the Fort Worth Regional Office, interacting daily with staff in the investigation and enforcement divisions, and in Austin at TCEQ headquarters, working with permitting staff and agency leadership. The agency is essentially a revolving door of folks who often leave to accept better paying jobs in the private sector after the state invests in their training. When I started as a full-time employee at the TCEQ in 2012, I accepted that position with a salary of about $35,000 a year. The folks I work with care deeply about protecting the environment and holding polluters accountable, but they also had families to support and provide for. More recently, before joining Public Citizen, I worked in the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Environmental Justice Division in Region 6 here in Dallas. That division, as you may know, has since been eliminated under the Trump administration's executive order. The funding cuts to TCEQ described in this report render the agency largely ineffective, and cuts to the EPA will worsen that ineffectiveness. According to the TCEQ's biennial report to the 89th legislature, the agency takes an average of 351 days to process a single enforcement case. According to the agency's most recent monthly enforcement report, it has a backlog of 1,400 enforcement cases, some of which are very complex and span across 10 years of intentionally delayed enforcement actions. Those delays in processing translate into delays in compliance because compliance is not mandated until months after that 351-day process is complete. And ultimately, it means communities don't get relief from the environmental harms those polluters are causing. According to the TCEQ's 2025 annual enforcement report, the agency received just over 9,000 complaints and responded to only 300 of them within 24 hours. The majority of those complaints, 54%, were never investigated. Only 4,200 of those 9,000 complaints were eventually investigated, and most took up to 30 days. In 2021, the Sunset Commission found that the TCEQ had not inspected 89% of the polluters it regulates, roughly 400,000 polluters in the state. Not just that year, but not even once in the previous 5 years. During a recent public hearing, TCEQ staff told me the agency has no intention of reducing the number of uninspected or unclassified entities because the Sunset Commission did not recommend it and the legislature did not mandate it. So when we say that the TCEQ is a reluctant regulator, this is a good example of how they live up to that name. Texans have long wondered if tragedies like the fertilizer explosion in West Texas or some of the more recent major petrochemical plant explosions might have been prevented with additional regulatory oversight. Communities ultimately bear the impact of the TCEQ's inability to effectively regulate industry in Texas, and they pay for it with their health. If the TCEQ had more funding, more monitoring equipment, more staff resources, I'd like to think it could retain talent, shorten the time it takes to respond to complaints, reduce the significant enforcement backlog, and achieve compliance sooner, mitigating harmful impacts to both the environment and communities across Texas. Thanks, Tom. I'll hand it back to you.
Thanks. That was Catherine Guetta, TCEQ Campaign Director for Public Citizen. And now from Louisiana, Ann Rolfes, Director of the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. Go ahead, Ann.
Thanks, Tom, and thanks so much to EIP for putting out this report. But for this report, it feels as if these cuts might go unnoticed, at least on a national level. Certainly here in Louisiana, we feel them deeply. I run a group called the Louisiana Bucket Brigade, and we work with people who live next to oil refineries, chemical plants, methanol plants, pipelines, gas export facilities, you name it, we've got it here in Louisiana, and it's a big problem. My overall message here today is that this ongoing reduction in staffing and funding is happening at the same time that two terrible things are happening in Louisiana. One is a rapid, robust expansion of industry, and the second is that expansion with the full force of government. We've always had the government cooperation with industry here, but I would say it's getting worse, and I'm going to show you all a few examples. Also apologize for the noise behind me, but that's what I've got. Okay, the report has the numbers, which I think speak for themselves, a 24% reduction in staffing and a 26% reduction in funding has already taken place over the last several years, even before the proposed EPA cuts. If you look on page 25, you'll see the section on Louisiana, which is called Polluter's Paradise. And there you have really great examples from some of my colleagues at other organizations in Louisiana that tell the impacts of these cuts. So I encourage y'all to look there. But I wanted to just get specific on the Department of Environmental Quality. We call it DEQ, the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality. That's the agency here that is del has the delegated authority for the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and other environmental laws. Now, already, right now, before these proposed cuts at the federal level, the state of Louisiana has what's called an expedited permitting program. That is, that industry can pay overtime for LDEQ staff in order to speed up the permitting process. You know, that is acknowledgement on behalf of the Department of Environmental Quality that they do not have the staffing because they're having to ask industry to pay for the permitting process. And as you can imagine, when industry pays for the permitting process, they get what they pay for. I've been doing this work, and I have never seen the Department of Environmental Quality deny a permit. And what's frightening now is that process is proposed to be getting faster. And I'll explain a little bit more about that in a minute. Let me show you, I'm going to show you some slides now that give you more detail on the ways in which government is supporting industrial expansion, just as we ought to be increasing enforcement and oversight. All right, what you have here before you is a map. Let me get this to full screen. And this is a map of a place called Ascension Parish. Louisiana, our counties are called parishes. The red indicates facilities that currently exist, and the yellow indicates facilities that our state and local government proposed to build. The blue swath in the middle there is the Mississippi River. So this is the area that is often known as Cancer Alley. The area that I want to focus on is what you see here. It's called Modeste. It's a beautiful area. People live there. But these big structures you see, 20, 27, 29, 30, 33, those are proposed new facilities. 29 would be a Hyundai plant. 27 is Exxon. 30 is CF Industries. 33 is would be a pig iron plant that we just heard about. And we have the expansion is happening so rapidly that we have to update this map almost every week. What's not even pictured here yet is a huge power plant that they would build for these facilities, as well as a Linde facility. So you can see that the expansion plan is extreme. And again, people live here. You know, they don't want to be moved. They didn't ask for this, but people live here. And yet, instead of coming and protecting people from the pollution that you see from across the river, the federal government and the state government is leaning into supporting industry. And I'm going to show you three examples of that. First example is at the federal level. This is a USA Today piece. Trump announces the Hyundai investment from the White House. He's standing next to our governor in the blue suit with the yellow tie. During this press conference, there's a recording, it's on YouTube. During this press conference, Trump said to Hyundai, if you have any problems getting your permits, don't worry, these guys will help you. And he pointed to the governor and to the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who you may know is from Louisiana. Second example, of the way in which, at this critical time, the state of Louisiana is trying to speed up permitting. The governor put in September something that he called the Louisiana Lightning Speed Initiative. He did it with executive order. And you can read, I'll give you a second to read the text here. A streamlined and accelerated approach. That's what he's proposing in a state where already industry can pay its way through permits. We don't feel that this is what we need right now. In fact, we need more oversight from the Department of Environmental Quality. And yet, this Louisiana Lightning Speed Initiative will go forward if something is not done. And then here's my third example of government facilitating industry at a time when they should be protecting us. This is an amicus brief. If you look at the highlighted area, it's an amicus brief filed by our attorney general, whose name is Liz Merrill, in support of the petitioners. And the petitioners in this case were included Koch Methanol, which is interested in expanding its huge methanol facility. Now, why is Liz Merrill protecting industry instead of telling the government that actually we need a beefed up Department of Environmental Quality? Well, let's look at who her donors are. These are here, some of her campaign contributors. In 2023, Koch Methanol contributed $10,000. That's the Koch brothers. You can see that they got what they paid for in terms of her amicus brief. The Louisiana Chemical Association contributed $20,000. Limoga contributed $5,000, and the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry contributed $40,000. So in Louisiana, we have pretty intense government action, not just on the state level, but also coming from the White House in support of industry. And we're here today to say we're in a state of decline. And in fact, we need more government oversight and safety mechanisms, not less. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Anne Rolfes, director of the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. Reporters, I know you have questions. We'd love to get them. Please look for the Q&A tab at the bottom of your screen. And if you have a question, for example, about Louisiana, I know we have some Louisiana reporters on the line. Type in your name and that you have a question. And at the end of the presentations, I'll call on you and we'd love to respond to your question. Next, from Illinois, we have Jen Walling, Chief Executive Officer of the Illinois Environmental Council. Go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, thank you so much. Again, I'm Jen Walling from the Illinois Environmental Council. We're a 50-year-old environmental coalition located throughout the state of Illinois. And on the national level, we're a partner of the League of Conservation Voters and part of the Conservation Voter Movement. Today's report from the Environmental Integrity Project makes one thing very clear. At the exact moment when the federal government is proposing the most drastic cuts to the US EPA in a generation, states are supposed to pick up the slack that are already operating with far fewer resources than they need. I've worked here in Illinois for 15 years, and we have asked our Illinois Environmental Protection Agency to do more every single year while giving it less than we had a generation ago. Over the last 15 years, Illinois has cut 20% of IEPA staff, nearly 200 people whose job it is to protect our air, water, and communities. General revenue support for the agency hasn't been restored since 2003, forcing IEPA to rely on unstable funds, permit fees, and federal dollars. When those funds are threatened at the national level, there is no safety net left to protect our health or environment. And when state capacity is stretched thin, that pressure falls on already cash-strapped cities like Chicago and other local governments that are juggling urgent public health, housing, and infrastructure challenges. We're seeing consequences right now in the aftermath of a large asphalt spill in the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal. This is connected to the Chicago River system that is part around our downtown. The pollution remains, and cleanup has stalled because the federal government has simply walked away from an incomplete cleanup. Local and state agencies simply don't have the resources to pick up the pieces when US EPA steps back all the time. Whether it's the implosion of a former coal plant stack in Little Village, which spread a dust cloud during COVID, or as referenced in the report, another instance on June 14th, 2021, when the Chemtool plant in Rockton caught fire and exploded, which caused an evacuation of all residents, and it took 9 days to put out. These type of disasters can be prevented by strong permitting, inspection, and enforcement. And I want to acknowledge that Illinois has lately taken steps in the right direction. I am so proud that Governor J.B. Pritzker and the new IEPA Director James Jennings have rebuilt capacity, bringing staff back up to nearly 850 employees, and we started at less than 700 at the beginning of the Pritzker administration. But even with their leadership, IEPA is still operating at a deficit of resources compared to what Illinois communities truly need. This report is a warning. If both lines of defense, our state agencies and the US EPA, are weakened at the same time, pollution enforcement will falter, emergencies will happen, and public health will suffer. We cannot pretend that states are prepared to shoulder this burden alone. Illinoisans deserve strong environmental protections, strong environmental justice, and that means strong investments. Our lawmakers, whether at the state or the federal government, need to make sure that Illinois EPA and US EPA have the people and the funding required to do the essential work. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. That was Jen Walling, Chief Executive Officer at the Illinois Environmental Council. And now, finally, as our closer from Pennsylvania, Alex Baumstein, Executive Director of the Clean Air Council. Go ahead, Alex.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for the introduction. As Tom said, my name's Alex Bomstein. I'm the Executive Director of Clean Air Council. We're an environmental and public health advocacy nonprofit working throughout Pennsylvania and in neighboring states. In 1990, because I'm taking us back now, in 1990, Republican President George Bush gave the following statement, which I'll quote in part. "Today, I am signing S-1630, a bill to amend the Clean Air Act. I take great pleasure in signing S-1630 as a demonstration to the American people of my determination that each and every American shall breathe clean air. The bill will allow the nation finally to meet air quality standards in every city, and in total, almost 30 million tons per year of dangerous chemicals and noxious pollutants will be prevented from fouling the air. The result of this new Clean Air Act will be that cancer risk, respiratory disease, heart ailments and reproductive disorders will be reduced. Damage to lakes, streams, parks, crops, and forests will greatly be lessened, and visibility will be notably improved. Today, looking back, we can note that the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990 were the last time in American history that Congress passed a sweeping law to tighten pollution controls in this country. The 1990s were also the last time we had a broad bipartisan political coalition in support of environmental protection in this country. And it's no coincidence that in the 20th century, we have seen continued and deep decline in funding for environmental protection across the nation. We're grateful to Environmental Integrity Project for detailing the ways the states have starved environmental agencies to allow polluter lawbreaking to flourish. Pennsylvania has trodden down the same path of decline. During the period of EIP's study, Pennsylvania experienced the biggest and sharpest gas boom in American history. With that absolute and sometimes literal explosion in toxic and polluting infrastructure, Pennsylvania did not rise to the occasion. Instead, agency staffing remained flat, actually falling compared to population growth. Despite the many good people at DEP who strive to protect the public from diesel fumes, fracking waste, and hazardous chemicals, our legislature and governors have kept DEP starved and weak. But the predatory fracking and petrochemical corporations, Pennsylvania has emptied taxpayer pocketbooks to lavish them with subsidies, like $1.6 billion for a failing Shell plastics plant. That's why 35 years after President Bush's declaration that the Clean Air Act amendments, quote, will allow the nation finally to meet air quality standards in every city, end quote, most Pennsylvanians live in an area that fails to meet those air quality standards. That's why the Pittsburgh metro area continues to be ranked worst on the East Coast for deadly particle pollution. And it's no wonder that Pennsylvania continues to experience nasty chemical spills, like the thousands of gallons of radioactive waste spilled from a Eureka Resources fracking waste processing plant just this last August. It's every Pennsylvanian's constitutional right to breathe clean air and drink pure water. We are not going to climb out of this pit of poison until we fund government to protect us from the lawbreakers fouling our air, water, and land. It's just that simple. We call on the Pennsylvania governor and every legislator to do right by your constituents by giving the Department of Environmental Protection the means to enforce the law and to hold polluters accountable. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Alex Baumstein of the Clean Air Council in Pennsylvania.